Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Griese broadcasting live from the Citadel. And we are here every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time to talk about American tennis. This is the American Tennis Show, and we are on the UR Tennis Network. That's the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and S Network. And the UR Tennis Network has many shows on all week long. Usually tune in right at noon, but go to your iPad and you can download any of their shows. Just go to UR Tennis and you can find every show that's on all week. This is American Tennis, and if you want to be on our show today, call in at area code 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. And I wanted to remind you that my website is chuckcreasy.net, and I wanted to also remind you that we have a competition camp here at the Citadel over Christmas. If you want your youngsters to learn about momentum control and tactical excellence in the heat of the battle, as we'd say. Most everybody's pretty good when there's not the heat of the battle, but we are teaching them in the heat of the battle what to do when. December 2021-22, go to my website, chuckcreasy.net, and see that, and also a coaching certification class for coaches, high school coaches, and any coach wants to take my total tennis training certification class. This is Chuck Griese, UR Tennis Network, and our mission on American Tennis each week is to stand up and to speak out and address those issues that you have interest in. Edmund Burke is my favorite quote of all time, is that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men or good women to do nothing. And your duty, my duty, is to stand up and speak out. Address issues, not people, and nobody can find fault. But today, folks, we have a really wonderful treat in store. Coach Kim Gidley from the Air Force Academy is on the line right now. I think you're on there, Kim, aren't you? I see your number just came up on the board. Are you there?
I'm here, Coach Griese.
All right. Well, Kim, thank you for taking time, and it's a little bit earlier out there. But, gosh, we just finished a hectic recruiting week. I hope you had a good recruiting week. Do you sign players at the normal on the normal dates like last Wednesday? You know, the Wednesday, today is the last date. Is it the same signing week as everyone else?
We typically don't have a letter of intent. We're like the Ivy League schools. But we try to give them what we call a letter of assurance, saying that, you know, while you're still continuing the process of getting your appointment and nomination and to come to the academy, you know, we're going to guarantee you a spot. So
well,
we try to make it as much as we can, but we can typically, we can sign any time of the year once we get our appointment because we don't have that signing date.
Right. It's really is interesting. I've got a couple coaching friends that called me and they lost out on recruits at the last minute and different things, and it's getting more and more sophisticated. And it's been 5 years since I was at Clemson, Kim, so it has changed a whole bunch since then. And we both now are at military schools, and one of the biggest reasons I wanted you on today, and, you know, if you could just talk a little bit about it before we go to commercial here in a little bit, but is I wanted you on to be able to talk about some of the very, very unique aspects of coaching at one of our military academies. And recruiting is just one of them. As you've said here, you can't sign people. So what's to keep a youngster from committing to the Air Force and then just saying, okay, I changed my mind? Does that happen?
It does happen. It hasn't happened to me, fortunately, but it happens to many coaches through the year. And we will say typically they could leave or they can sign, and they can sign their appointment, which is basically our letter of intent. But then they can sign with any school in the country until school starts. So even during their basic training, if they come and they say, this place is not for me, they can, as long as it's not in the same conference. So we do we have some quirky rules, as well as we can have people sign with another school, and in February when they get their official appointment, they can come out, and then they can come and sign with us. So it does work both ways, and I've had that happen several times.
Okay. Well, I like hearing that because It is a tougher go of it, but I just want to tell all the listeners out there that I was privileged enough to have July 1 through 3 this year to spend three wonderful days there in Colorado Springs with you and with the Little Mo organization there. They were putting on a Little Mo camp and a it was fantastic, Kim. I just, that's the only way I can describe it, and we want to definitely promote what you're doing in Air Force Academy, but I want to also get to the differences so people have a good understanding of what's going on out there. But it was fantastic. I mean, how could anybody not come to – if they've got to be interested in military, first of all, if they're coming there. But once they get to Colorado Springs, do you lose anybody ever when they come out and visit you?
Very rarely, but it is it's a special place. It's not for everybody, and so that's why we do want people to come on campus. If you can come on campus and see what we're about, see our facilities, see beautiful Colorado, meet the people here, which are phenomenal, and you have that whole combination. If it's the right fit for you, then I mean they're kind of like me. You'll fall in love with it once you see it. I mean, I always joke that I had no intention of ever applying to the Air Force Academy and being a coach here. This was never a goal of mine or even an afterthought. It was actually a complete accident. I was looking to get back into college coaching and did some work with David Kent at Texas A&M, and he's like, you know, Kim, you just simply amazing. You got to apply for every job. Just apply for every job out there. So when the job came open, I applied. And I had been at University of Idaho in Moscow, Idaho, and I drove 24 straight hours, and I stopped in Colorado Springs and got a hotel room. And I called my dad and said, hey, I'm going to drive the next 12 hours the next day. I'll see you tomorrow. And he said, well, the coach called. And I said, okay, I'll call him. And called them and they said, oh, we got your resume. We want to talk to you. And you know, since you're here, why don't you come and look at the facilities? And I was thinking, okay, I'll look an hour or two and then drive the rest of the way to Texas. Well, I ended up spending 8 hours that day. Loved it. I thought it was the best-kept secret in America. Got an interview the week later and then started right when our kids in process here to the academy. So it was really, there was no intention. But, and my dad was in the Air Force for 22 years as a career officer. So the fact that I, you know, wasn't interested when it came open, but when I got here and saw the opportunities available, the things that we had to offer, and the people, I was like, this is amazing.
It really was. And so, Kim, you grew up in Texas, right? Can you talk about your background here? I'd rather you talk about it than me to read your long resume here. Just, if you know, and you're such a humble person, maybe I'll have to pop in some things there. But talk about growing up and where you did your tennis and how you got into college coaching there.
Well, you know, Texas tennis is great, and that's part of with the USTA, the directions that we're going. I was a Parks kid. When we moved to Texas, my dad was in the military, and he retired. That was the first time we've ever lived on a regular house. We always lived on base housing. And the school that I was going to was overcrowded, so they sent me to a different elementary. And when it was time to go to junior high, there was nobody going to the junior high that I was supposed to go to. And we lived one house from the border. My dad said, no, you can't get a transfer. You got to learn to meet other people. You got to learn to adjust to other environments. And so there was one girl from my school, and she played tennis, and her mom helped with the tennis team. And they had what was called junior high tennis. And she said, why don't you sign up for tennis so that you would know one person in one class? And I said, okay, I'll sign up for tennis. And our school, there were 7 junior highs in the town, and they had 3 went to one high school, 3 went to the other high school, and then ours was split. But ours was the only school that didn't have courts. And all these other schools had 8 courts and a tennis building, and we didn't have anything. So we were bused to a city facility. And our school coach was a math teacher who learned from a book. And if it rained, we went inside a gym floor, and we did ups and we did downs. And the thing I learned from him is we did something every day. And then he said, because he didn't know much about tennis, he said, you need to sign up for some group lessons at the city facility, you know, 8 people in a group afterwards. And that's what I did. And that's where my really first tennis coach was.
What was his name, Kim? What was his name?
His name was Jay Myers.
Jay Myers.
And the great, the great story about that is a couple years ago, I was at the 16s intersectionals, just looking at kids, and I was like, who's that girl? And this mom says, well, that's my daughter. She's playing for the Hawaii team, but she's not from Hawaii. And obviously, you know, we can't recruit her, so we just wrote down her name and put her in our database, because the whole tournament, that was the only kid I asked of, who's that kid? And 2-3 years later, it's time that we can start sending out information, and we start sending information, and her mom calls and said, you wouldn't be Kim Gidley from Abilene, Texas, would you? And I was like, yes. And that was his daughter. And then she's here at the Air Force Academy.
Oh,
which
no,
is even
that's
more unbelievable.
Well, I mean, that's the tennis world. But I had a similar start. You know, I was a Parks kid too, you know, Kim. So, but go on then. And you definitely got better and better at tennis. And how did you hook up with David Kent there eventually?
Well, my coach had worked with him in college, and so just in teaching camps and stuff, and wanting to learn and wanting to get better, and so having known him through several coaches, that's kind of the connection there. But the big key is that you know, you just played. I mean, we had dollar tournaments every Saturday. And you were allowed, if you're an athlete, and I played all other sports, that you were allowed to kind of rise to the top, because my first year I didn't win a match. And I always joke, my first tournament, I played at 3 a.m. inside a wooden gym floor, and I lost a match 6-0, 6-0 to the number one seed, and I thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread and peanut butter. You know, I told my mom to drop me off at 2 a.m. and pick me up at 5, And you got to, you know, hit on the walls and meet with people. So when it snowed, you never canceled tournaments. You just played all night long, and they'd set up the court on the volleyball lines and the basketball lines, and here's your tennis lines, and play. And I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, I was 12 years old and getting to stay out at night and getting to hit on the wall and talk to people. I mean, it was, you know. And so then I lost, so I had to play at 8 a.m., I didn't sleep very much, and we shoveled the snow outside on the side, and I played outside, and I lost again. But those were experiences that, you know, nowadays we limit. You can't do this. You can't play after this time. And it was just such a great environment to get to play tennis.
So the dollar tournaments with dollars was the entry fee? Or
$1 was the entry fee.
And I love it.
You played four pro sets. And, you know, like I said, I think I went my whole first year, I didn't win a single tournament. And then, you know, 2-3 years later, then I'm, you know, the second best player in the city. But it allowed, you know, we didn't segment. It allowed, if you're a good athlete, for you to rise to the top and learn to compete. And I think that's one of the problems sometimes with junior tennis is they've never lost or they don't know how to learn from losing. And so I always used to get into big debate from my coach of, you know, every time you lose, it takes a piece out of you. And I was like, well, every time I lost, it motivated me more. And so I learned through the process. And so, you know, these good players, when all of a sudden they've won one, one, and they start losing, they don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to get to that next level because it's a loss. It's. I always tell our players, it's you win or you learn. You never lose. And we're doing a clinic with these little kids, and these, you know, little kids are like, well, how do you deal with losing? And one of my players like, we never lose. We always learn. You know.
Kim, that's so beautiful. I was doing a seminar this last week, and, of course, the big line we always give kids, especially here at the Citadel, you've got to share some quotes that you use there at the Air Force Academy, but I tell them it's more important what happens in you than what happens to you, you know, and you win or you lose. Never let losses go to your heart. Never let wins go to your head. Should be the opposite. Wins should go to your heart. Losses go to your head. But sounds like you're saying pretty much the same thing, and the philosophy is pretty much the same. Is that accurate?
I would say that is very accurate. It's just a different way to say it, but it is, yeah.
Yeah, and here's the point I want to make before we go to commercial. And we had a caller already on the line. If you could hold there, we'll allow you to make some questions here in the second part of the show. But the thing is that with our kids, they're always trying to set up a perfect scenario. Parents are trying to set up a perfect scenario. It's always about what happens to them. They got a bad deal. They got this happen. They had this happen to them. They can't play past a certain hour or deadline. You know, Kim, I had a similar situation. I can remember playing in the Binford Park Open in New Albany, Indiana. Mr. Sam Peden down there, out there, he's been gone for a while. But Mr. Peden always used to run the tournament. He put up army cots in the gym, so we would play tennis all day. And I literally could count 13 or 14 sets we would play. And then we would go sleep on the army cots and talking about the best time of your life at 13 or 14 years old, right?
That's it. It's about playing. It's not about parents. It's not about this or that. And we've got too much involvement.
We absolutely do, Kim. And we'll be right back and talk with you so much more about this. We got to go to quick commercial. We'll be right back, Coach Kim Gidley. It's a pleasure having you on here. And this is Coach Chuck Creasy, but listen, tennis is such a crazy game. You never know what you've got from day to day. Your strokes might be great. You might be in tremendous conditioning. But the thing is, the real clue to the game is what you do on the court under pressure. If you'd like for your youngsters to learn the fundamentals of momentum control, tactical excellence, and much more, send them to the Citadel December 20 to 22nd for my competition camp. Call area code 864-710-6973. That's 864-710-6973. 7-3. We have a competition camp where they will learn all of the finest techniques of momentum control and things that aren't out there in books, folks. Also, we have a coach's seminar that where we have a certification course January 3rd and 4th also at the Citadel. Both of these are at chuckcreasy.net. If you'll just go to chuckcreasy.net and click on the blog or go to the campsite, you can get information about both of these camps. Remember, competition camp and the coaching certification camp over the holiday period. Making players in America, making leaders in America. We're trying to do it here at the Citadel. And Kim Gidley at Air Force Academy. Kim, I'd like for you to talk about your evolution as a coach at the Air Force. This would be good for me, first of all, because it's my first year coaching at a military school. Things that threw you for a loop, things you did well. What can you remember? Can you tell us a few stories?
Well, I think the number one thing coaching at a military academy is everything. It's a constant learning environment, and everything changes. The biggest thing, and this helped me, I have an advantage with my dad having been in the military. I was used to people walking around in uniforms and things like that, and I truly embrace the environment. But, things that I had to learn early on is I had to learn how to schedule around our academic times. We have mid-semester grades, and if you're going to play during those times, the kids are going to suffer both ways. They're not going to be motivated to practice, motivated to play, because they're so stressed out about that. So through the years, I've learned to really, hey, I need to avoid these certain weeks of we just don't compete during those weeks. It's not like another school where you can just play every weekend. So the scheduling is something. The other thing is even more balance than what we have. So being with the academy and traveling and things like that, you know, at other schools and at times I would never give a day off, and, you know, other than the NCAA one-day mandated. But if we travel or compete on the weekend, we have to give a Monday off just to keep our kids to be able to do their laundry, to catch up, even though we travel with tutors on the road. And we take a lot of our tests on the road and our papers are done. That's a little bit different environment where they need that extra time just to regroup for themselves, which when I first started out coaching, I didn't do and wouldn't do. And then also kind of with the scheduling is, we came in, we had a bunch of good athletes, we had a lot of success, and then I scheduled too hard for the next couple of years. Winning's a habit, losing's a habit, but also kind of finding that fine balance enough where you have to work towards it, whereas if we're just not good enough at a certain time, I can't overschedule. And so I think through the years I really have done a much better job of being able to do that to, you know, allow the kids to set them up to be successful without watering down, hey, you're going to have to show up and compete, but it allows them to do it.
Explain that now. Your normal, and I'm finding this out as well. First of all, I'd preface it this way. Tell me if this is true. I feel like I get twice as much done in the same amount of time. These kids are just so locked in. They're every ball they hit seems important. What having coached other places and then coming to the Air Force, what are your thoughts there? Do you feel that way?
It's 100%. It's the quality, not the quantity. And then I have a unique opportunity where I teach classes, so I have a great gauge of how are the kids, you know, doing this day. And there's certain things like, you know, we have to deal with sleep deprivation, you know, or you talk to a kid, and I haven't slept in a bed in 3 months because, you know, they're afraid to mess it up and like, no. And so part of it's educating them. And I think at first I was just like, oh, everybody does it. And I was like, no, it is an education process of you can do this, and teaching them time management and things like that. But there are times that, my first conference tournament, my second conference tournament we went to, and this is the thing that I have learned to do well, is I do listen to the players a little bit more than what you would listen at another school, because another school, a lot of times you would say, you're just whining, you're just this. And my second year, we're going to the conference tournament. You know, we leave at 6 a.m. We're going to practice in the morning. We're going to practice in the afternoon. We're going to be ready for the tournament. And, you know, we fly into the town, and the kids are like, Coach, can we just eat and go sleep? We haven't slept. And like, you know, we've gotten 2-3 hours of sleep. And I'm like, what? And, you know, like, yeah, Coach, this is that hard academic week. And sometimes with a conference, you can't control that. And so the greatest thing I did as a coach is did listen to him. And I said, okay, we had a great breakfast, went, we let him sleep for 7 hours, hit for about 30, 45 minutes, went to the banquet. And the next day, they played lights out tennis. They were so motivated. But I think if I wouldn't have balanced that and maybe listened to them, then that's a huge key, and it's a fine line, because you don't want to baby them too much or coddle them too much, but then there's things that you have to listen to. Last year I had a girl pass out during a match, and I knew she hadn't gotten much sleep during the week, and it was a conference match, same thing, are you okay, are you doing okay? And that morning she had to take a big midterm exam, and then we played the match at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and she's, you know, changeover, I could tell she's not looking good, and are you okay? Are you nervous? No, I don't feel good. And I was fixing to call a medical timeout, and the next changeover, she's walking to me. She just passes out and faints on the court, you know. So those are things that you have to deal with. And so as a coach, I have to be very in tune to where they're at physically with the sleep deprivation.
And trusting them, what you already alluded to that, but trusting them is so very, very important, because we, I've came from a state university, and where it was a, you know, a big sports position, you know, it's a big sports university, and you always fought the 3 straight nights of keg parties. So you got used to kids really just trying to, you know, showing up halfway into it, and that's completely, it's a completely different environment now, right?
Yeah, it's for a complete different reason. How can you balance that? So it's good for you, good for the program, good for the kid. And there is, it's a whole different trust level. I mean, issues that I've had at other universities that I've been at 2 other universities, and what I would have to maybe worry about there and what I worry about here are 100% different.
You know, there's probably a parent or two out there speaking and saying, whoa, wait a minute, my child's going to go there and pass out and they don't get sleep deprivation and things, and, you know, and this scares them to death. Can you walk somebody through just a normal week for a cadet, or, you know, what they do, and then, but also the benefits, not just the downside of it?
Well, I think first of all, we're going to go to class every day. They get up at 6 a.m.
You don't miss class. That's
have,
right.
If you miss five,
you get thrown out. That's right.
You know, there's not an option. So, you know, they get up. Reveille goes off at 6. You're going to get up. Couple days a week you march to breakfast. Some days, 3 days a week you march to breakfast. The other 2 days you have optional breakfast. You're going to go to class until noon. You're going to march to lunch. You may have one other class. And then the rest of the afternoon is set up for athletics. So to me, I think for an academic standpoint, it's probably the greatest place in the country, because you're going to graduate in 4 years. There's no 5-year program. And you're going to get every core class you have without missing practice, without missing class. So I think it works both ways. So when you say student-athlete, it's a phenomenal student-athlete. The other thing is that we're on a block schedule. So rain or shine, we know exactly what we're doing each day. I mean, it is pretty regimented. So, you know, and what a block schedule is, it's phenomenal for college, particularly if you travel, because it limits the amount of class time you miss. Because a typical school would have a Monday, Wednesday, Friday class for 50 minutes. Well, what we do is we have chemistry Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The next week it's Tuesday, Thursday. Then it alternates Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday. So if I miss four Fridays in a row, I'm only missing two of the same class instead of four, which is phenomenal to compete at the collegiate level. So it doesn't overwhelm you because the academics are such a big demand. And so that's a big part of it. And then when they come down here, they're ours that whole time. And our phrase that we have to educate typically freshmen is be here, not there. So when they're in class, they need to be focused on chemistry and not be thinking about the Tevegas coming up or things like that. When they're down here, they need to be thinking about, again, going for that quality, that tennis ball that they're hitting, what they're doing, rather than, oh, man, I just messed up on that quiz or something, and, oh, I forgot to turn in that paper. And so that's really being able to segment and time management where you're at to get 100% of that effort is really crucial at an academy, because if you let it all blend together, they're pretty much useless. And so that's an education process, you know, as a freshman that we'd really try to emphasize. And then it makes life much better for everybody, you know. If we can get practice done in an hour and a half or 2 hours, we'll get it done and we'll be in and out and have high energy, high intensity. And then when they compete, they can bring it the same way. And I think that's huge at an academy, because it is that quality, and that is, we focus so much on enthusiasm, energy, and intensity. So when we go out there, it is like going to war. I mean, the tennis courts are battlefield. It's, you know, it's like Braveheart. You know, let's go fight. But we have to practice that. If you can't just come to practice and da 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 da, and then go out and have that type of level of intensity, and we really expect that. But it's set up for you to be very successful. Academically as a student athlete, militarily you're going to get your training in, and then, you know, and I the thing that I love about an academy is that the military aspect pushes you to limits, that it gives you self-confidence in yourself, and it gives you self-confidence as a person, as a student, and as a tennis player. And sometimes I think I'm a great coach, but it has nothing to do with me as a coach. It has to do with the environment and the things that they went through, and they learn to believe in themselves, and they have that momentum and belief. That's why a lot of times our kids really overachieve, and that's what we want every time. We want to get 100% out of them.
Well, and the evolution is just amazing, right? You've seen people just make tremendous steps in 2 or 3 year period. But when they leave the Air Force Academy, then they have 5 years. Is that correct, in the military?
That is correct.
And they go anywhere around the world?
Anywhere around the world. And even while they're here during the summer, they only have 3 weeks off, so they have summer jobs. So this year we had one girl that had a summer job in the Ukraine, and she speaks Russian. We had another girl that had a summer job in Morocco, and she speaks Arabic. And we had another girl that had another summer job in Egypt. But all of our girls speak another language. They travel throughout the world. So it's really a phenomenal opportunity to get to see the world. And, of course, the Air Force operates on a global environment. So...
Yeah,
we really sometimes amazing. Joke when we play the internationals that we could all speak a different language and know what they're saying, and they would think we're an international team.
we're proud to be American,
so we'd never do that.
What an education. What an education. I had a young man was thinking about going to a military school, West Point, when I was working up at College Park, and the boss up there, Ray Benton, was great at speaking to the young man, saying, it is not about having to go to 5 years of service. You're getting 9 years of the best leadership training in the world, and before you get to 30, you will have done more than most people have done by the time they're 50. And I always thought that was a good way, you know, good way to put that, you know. But we had a caller here, Kim, and he or she just hung up here a second. Again, area code 806, if you will take your call here, if you'll get back on the line. Folks, we're talking to Kim Gidley here, who's the coach at the Air Force Academy. And, Kim, just one more thing. The facilities out there are phenomenal. Your indoor facilities, your outdoor facilities. You want to just talk about what they do for the athletes out there as far as trying to make it a great place for them to compete and to live?
Well, everybody has to either play a sport or they have to participate in intramurals. So our athletic facilities, we're a school of 4,000 students, and we have to push ourselves. A strong mind equals a strong body. Or a strong body equals a strong mind. So they're very interested in the fitness and the athletics. We have 30 outdoor courts. We have a four-court multi-million indoor facility. And then along with that, we have three different weight rooms. But more importantly, we even have a human performance lab. And a lot of the Olympic athletes train there. Some of the Denver Broncos,
yeah,
the Rockies come down. And that lab is, you know, we train there 3 days a week. And so because we are the government, we do have the state-of-the-art fitness, and we can push you with the research. We do research projects, you know, whether it's a, you know, we can train at sea level at altitude, which is phenomenal as an athlete. We have an oxygen chamber. We can have a vision lab. So
the vision lab was amazing. The only place I've seen that, we have a guy, Lenny Sloss, here in Charleston that has a thing called the eye machine. Well, I'm trying to think what they call it again. Just slipped my mind. But it basically trains the vision, you know, of a player. And that's the best thing. I couldn't believe what you had out there as far as just light years ahead of most coaches and facilities.
It is, and that's why we can really train with that, the quality of the time. And it's set up of, we've got our 30 minutes here, our 2 hours here. And then if they want more, they can always get more. But we're going to utilize that time very well.
Yeah, the eye coach. I'm sorry, Lenny. But the eye coach. So, okay, real quick, just walk a couple minutes because I do want to ask you about USA Tennis here. But walk us through the 1-2-3 progression of what a young lady needs to do if she wants to attend the Air Force. She's a freshman, sophomore in high school. She wants to go to Air Force. What should she do?
First thing is fill out a questionnaire. And then by the time they're a junior, then we can start contacting them. And then a lot of times we say try to do an unofficial visit because kids commit so early now, and they have that pressure to commit early. And I think that's been, you know, this summer I had four kids that did an unofficial visit as a junior, and I think that's made a difference in why we've had a good recruiting season this year. But their coaches are asking you to commit earlier and earlier and earlier. There's no right or wrong decision, but you got to get enough information to make a good decision. And if you can come for an unofficial visit, then come on back later. And if we can bring you out for an official visit, that's when you get to meet the players, the girls, the team, because for us, that's what sells it. And the great thing about me is, the team, is that it changes every year. And I've been here 16 years. They are so creative, and they never cease to amaze me. And I think sometimes in the tennis world, we've taken out that creativity. But this year, the girls came up with a saying that they call them sorority sisters, Alpha Phi Thai for AFT Air Force Tennis. And they came up with this chant before they go, like, we are sisters, together we fight, individually we strive for greatness, you know, we hold ourselves accountable for our team and our country. I mean, it's unbelievable. I go, I would have never, they've got their hand signals, they want shirts, but the creativity that they get to do is phenomenal, and that's why it's really important on a visit is to get to meet the players, the people around there, not just see the facilities, because every coach is going to coach different. Every coach is going to have a different philosophy, and you got to make sure that meshes with yours. And I have a big thing that I've done a lot of research on. I started my PhD in sports psychology of group cohesion of the female athlete, because there's a lot of mean girls out there, and it's tough. And
can I say this? Can I say this? I got to coach girls for 2 years, and I believe that the alpha girls, the bossier ones, usually had advantage. They went through this. Am I right on this? They usually would go through a thing where one would try to boss the other one around a little bit. I mean, maybe not always, but am I on to something there or what?
That, I mean, there's something to that there. You could talk hours on the team dynamics of females, and particularly because we're an individual sport in a team environment, which even makes it, there's a lot more dynamics there. And then do they bring each other up? Do they pull each other down? How do you work in that whole environment?
Kim, I felt like if they trusted you and they knew that you cared about them, they worked harder than any man I've ever coached. When I was in Asia and I had some, you know, these Asian girls, maybe they're completely compliant, but my golly. And I coached privately some young ladies up in South Carolina, up in Clemson. Oh, the biggest heart I ever had was a young girl I taught from a town of Walhalla, South Carolina, up there. Claire Dillman up there, if she ever listens to his show. But my golly, what a big heart the girl had, a girl named Chris Huff years ago. But if they trusted you, that I've never seen such determination.
You hit it. That's the nail to the head right there, 100%.
Okay. But if they don't trust you, forget it.
Yep. With in working with females, yep, they will jump off cliffs for you. I mean, my high school. The reason I coach is for my high school coach. I will do anything for him and for his family. I've been friends with him for 30 years. His name is Jerry Tyser, and literally, if you said hold the racket upside down and play this way, and he told me to do that, I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
I believed him 100%. You know,
well,
and
nobody cares what you know unless they know that you care. That's an old one, and it goes back. But let me ask you this,
with
Kim.
With females, it's huge.
Yeah, for sure. All right, it's been over 20 years since we had Lisa Raymond played at University of Florida, then came out and made top 100, top 50 in the pros. For the most part, our American girls go to college, and I'm not going to say they get worse, but they don't advance. They're not advancing. The proof's in the pudding there. What's going on?
I think there's a combination of both. I think if you're a top-ranked female and you're going to go to college, the pathway, and obviously this is going to be impacted probably with some scoring things, you really have to find the right fit with your personality and how you've trained through the years, because if you've done something one way and then you go to a coach and go a totally different way, it's not going to mesh and it's not going to work and it's not going to be a good environment for anyone. So my thought is if you're a big fish in a little pond, you need to go to a school that's a big fish in a little pond. If you're a little fish in a big pond and that's how you've had success, that's the type of school that you need to go to, as well as the personality of the coach, because it is a relationship, particularly with the females. And it's tough. I mean, and females do develop earlier than males. I've always encouraged them to go to college, but you know, I know a player that was one of the nation in 14, 16s, and 18s, and did the pathway to college, and you know, won 2 10Ks right out of high school, and it's tough. It's a whole different environment, and you know, the frustration I know for her of like going to a place and maybe the team environment doesn't mesh with how she trained in juniors and things like that, and it wasn't conducive to her development, you know. Now everybody's different, and that's I think it can work for some, but it's you really have to find that right fit. And I think we try to maybe change too much. If you've got something that works, and then you're coming to that level, and that it's again this power momentum. If you got someone that's got all this momentum and juniors coming out, then you need to keep that going. I also think that sometimes in the juniors, they're allowed to jump too much out of the age divisions, and then when they do that, and then in college you're playing with someone even you, then they, it's not that they, you know, they just find other interests. You know, I'm not a burnout believer as much as
People who win are winning are never burnout.
When they lose, they find other interests. It might be guys, it might be alcohol, it might be parties. They're going to find other interests, and that's where it's going to go.
Yeah, and it is frustrating. I've argued over the years that I don't think that we play enough tournament tennis in college. I think that the dual match format might be part of the problem and the culprit, because if you're a number five player, you just play number five per people. And, even golf, Kim, and track and field and swimming, they were all dual match sports back in the 60s and things, and we really – you know, the kids were sort of locked into you can only go this high, you can only go this low type of mentality, where tournaments really, you know, the first two rounds of a tournament, you play people that are a little weaker than you. You know, you work into a tournament. The middle rounds, you usually play somebody that's about your level, and the higher rounds, somebody that's a real step up at the semis and the finals. But what are your thoughts there about our format and what we might be doing better to develop players? Any thoughts?
Well, obviously you hit on the tournament play, and I think as for college, I think that we could work it with the Texas Tennis Coach Association. They do something with their high school stuff. They play their fall tennis in the team tennis in the fall. And they play the individual tennis in the spring. And they play 18 to 20 dual matches, but then the spring is more the bulk of their tennis. And so it kind of sets it up to, I've had some success, and let me go ahead and do what I can do to get to that next level in the individual tournament. We don't play enough individual tournaments. I mean, in juniors, you used to have a 256 draw or 128, and you play it in 3 or 4 days. And same thing. Is it real tennis? How many tournaments do you go in individual tournament? Do you play real tennis? When you lose, you're out.
You know, Kim, Randy Blumendahl from Indiana University was on last week, and he's proposed that same format as Texas High School uses for colleges. He believes we ought to be doing the team matches in the fall, maybe 16 to 18 matches or something. You do them on football weekends. You play Friday nights with a football crowd on campus, and then maybe a Sunday afternoon, and then you have your tournament done by Thanksgiving. And then he proposed that you have a grand slam of college tennis, where you do a clay court indoor outdoor in NCAA that would generate interest in spurring tournaments, satellite events off of those, and then kids would springboard into the summer, he said. I mean, obviously, you brought up Texas there, and I've heard that many, many times, that that's probably the best developmental high school program in the country. Do you agree?
Oh, I hands down agree. And then, you know, their fan base, they can get 300-400 people at a match. I mean, it's unbelievable at a team match. But I think, and I guess speaking from personal experience, when I played high school tennis and I had some success, and maybe my success was in the doubles, then it gave me confidence to become a better singles player. And then that springboarded. And so, you know, it allows you to kind of work through that fall of where's your level, but boom, if you all of a sudden have success in one of the two areas that you're playing, and then you go in the spring, that confidence can carry over, and that's what you're doing every weekend is playing a tournament in the spring.
Well, you've hit on so many things that we've talked about already, about the importance of the doubles, 2 out of 3 sets, because that's where players get their confidence to feel like they have arrived. When they get to play in the semis and the finals of the doubles, then they feel a part of it, and that sort of is an inroad, you know, into the thing. Kim, let me ask you real quick about foreign recruiting. I've argued over the years, we all know that with the Title IX, it was a very, very good rule, very poorly implemented in many ways, in that it was never set up to demolish a lot of the men's programs. That wasn't the purpose. It was to give, you know, our USA women an opportunity, my daughter, your daughter, you, and the women an opportunity, which they did not have back before the 70s, late 70s, really, for this. But, here's the point. It was not set up to protect women from France, from Spain, from Russia, from Italy, from Thailand, from these other countries. And most of the scholarships are going toward foreign recruitment. And, you know, anything you'd like to could add there without, I know you're a college coach and so am I, you know, we've got to be a little, we've got to be careful about some of the things we say, but my golly, it's very frustrating. My daughter could get shut out of a chance for a scholarship because it's going to go some girl from Russia or something.
Well, and like I said, I recruit only Americans, so it's a little bit, we've done that a little bit to ourselves, because a lot, not all, but a lot of the American kids are spoiled. We said, here's a Coke, here's a candy bar, and you can do anything, and money can get you so far. But in the bottom line, when you play a tennis match, you either win or you lose, and money's only going to be able to do that for so long with the way the system is. And so you take a lot of times these international kids, and they'll go anywhere. They'll go to Podunk U. I mean, you know, and they'll be glad to be in America. And they're going to go to class, and they're going to graduate in 4 years and things like that. And our kids, well, I'll only go if I can go to School X. Well, you might be able to go to School X, but maybe you need to go to School Y first for a year or two, and then you can transfer there and play. Or you don't have the record to do that yet. And so there's a lot of really good U.S. talent that doesn't play in college tennis because they've limited themselves so much to what their opportunities are.
They pedigree shop. I always say they go pedigree shopping. You know, they want to be able to say they'd rather ride the bench at a big school where their parents can talk at a cocktail party about my son or my daughter's going to this school rather than going to school where they can play.
Right.
I mean,
you've hit the nail on the head, and we don't, you know, or we're going to pass up opportunities to go play. I mean, there are scholarships out there. They can play. It's not maybe where they want. But then down the road, they could work that. And that's what a lot of the internationals will come. They're maybe phenomenal players, and they get at Podunk U. And then, hey, here, come transfer to our school now, you know. But
then the unintended consequences of getting, you know, and I know exactly where the coaches who coach international students are coming from. These kids are hardworking. They do graduate in 4 years. They're just thriving, just so, so happy for the opportunity that they've had to get their education played for tennis. But at the same time, with it's now to the place where to be competitive in a league, you almost have to recruit at some of these places with international students, and it's just really knocked out all the opportunities for our middle range young ladies. If you're in the top 80, you're fine, or top 60, you're fine probably, but after that, you're competing against the other countries first. Is there a solution?
Well, I think for the U.S. kids is that you've got to be willing to say, you know, you can't pedigree shop. I'll go to a junior college. I'll go here because I want to play. You know, it goes back to, do you want to play or do you not want to play? And because we've made it so easy or so nice or sometimes where it's very expensive to play USGA tennis. Parents have invested this money. They only want to go to School X. But there's a lot more schools out there where there's unused scholarships every year. And I think as females, we've got it, and it's more scholarships rather than for the men. But we've got to get out of ourselves and saying playing Division II, playing Division III, playing an NAI is a great opportunity. Or playing Division I at an academy. I mean, I'll have parents, well, we can't get a Division I scholarship. And I'm like, okay, I'll recruit you. No, I'm not interested in you. You know, and so we're too picky. So we can't be that picky if you want to play. You've got to earn the right. We can't just say I'm a U.S. player. My parents have spent this much money, and I want a scholarship now.
Yeah, I don't quite remember when this happened. It was sort of the mid '80s where American parents, American kids, got really picky about pedigree shopping and into stuff more. It used to be that just people wanted it. My first 10 years. I felt like people just wanted a chance to play. They wanted to go to school. They were happy to be recruited. And it is really interesting now that people try, and going back to one of my earlier statements, Kim, parents protect too much what's happening to their kids instead of teaching the kids that it's more important what happens in them. And so I got a quick question here. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes here. Kim, USTA tennis, are we far enough along with the development of players? It just seems like our players fundamentally, they might be lacking in areas. And what could we do better? If you were in charge of everything, what would you say we could do better? I mean, there's good people there, but, I always say bureaucracies sometimes keep good people from doing good things. But what could we do better to make our players at a higher level, especially females?
They got to be able to keep score. I mean, they got to be able to compete. And when I first came to the academy, we'd do a drill, and we're going to play to 12.
I love it.
What's the score? Well, I don't know. I mean, what do you mean you don't know? We're playing. I mean, we've got to compete. I mean, we've made these we can't make it too tough on one. Well, I was a teaching pro for years. When I did that, we're going to have the tennis Olympics. When I've got three-year-olds, six-year-olds trying to hit 600 balls against the wall, and then they're crying afterwards because some kid got 605, we're going to do it again. I mean, we've
That's
got to learn
stuff.
To compete.
That's
and we don't
stuff.
We don't do that anymore. We've
Kim,
taken
I just
that
gave
away.
A talk to the kids this last week. I said, I said trying hard is not competing. We always say, oh, you're a hard trier. One kid one time recently, just it was a young man saying, well, I'm doing my best. And I said, and you want to say, well, your best not good enough. That's tried. But I'm saying, no. Wait. Here is the standard. There is the bar. Your job is to get over the bar. When we were training, and he said, well, I'm doing my best. And this is so bad that we're not teaching our kids to compete, do you feel the same way?
100%. I think that's the demise of American tennis. I mean, we don't let them learn from losing, and we got to protect everybody. Oh, my kid is, no. Let them go out there and compete and learn. And we don't play anymore. I mean, we don't have the war of attrition. Who really wants to play? Let's battle and let's go out there and play for a couple hours. We don't do that. I mean, with my coach, it would be I would come back from made the first time I made the finals of a major tournament. I called my coach driving back. Get back at 8:30 at night. Coach, you ready to play? We'll go out and play 3 out of 5 sets. We bet for something every time. In fact, when many years later, I'd still come back from the NCAAs. Coach, you want to play? Yeah, we're going to play for your All-American certificate. That was the only match I ever wanted to win because I was like, I wanted to give that to him. I wasn't going to lose it to him.
Coach
Joe? No, this was Jerry Tyser. But we didn't, and then the next day I'm going to leave for a tournament and drive another 5 hours. But we don't do that anymore. We don't play. We don't expect young kids to compete and keep score, and you got to keep score. Because there's one winner and one loser, and you got to learn to deal with it, and that's going to make your athletes rise to the top of who wants to get better and who likes to compete.
And winning should feel really, really good. I always tell kids, and losing should hurt a lot. And losing means that I don't want this to happen again. Therefore, I'm going to train hard, and so that it doesn't happen again. I think you probably were listen, I'll tell you, I felt when I met you that we had a connect in coaching. And, Kim, I just, you're just so right on. And any other thing real quick, only I have about a minute here, Kim, thank you.
I appreciate you allowing me. And just even the last statement you said, a couple years ago we played Army and we lost. I had a girl lose 7-6 in the third to lose the team match. The next year, and she's at number 6 singles. And the next year, she played number 4 and won 6-0, 6-1. And we're like, what's the difference? She goes, I didn't want to be in that situation again. I was going to work to get better, so I wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And we don't do that anymore. We don't expect people.
You only win to the level you hate losing down to or can't stand losing to. And it's not about the nice moment all the time. And Kim Gidley, I can't thank you enough for being on here.
Made in America, born in a hotland. Best of a family, King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spent a little more in the store for a tag. In the back it says USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench. He ain't president, he's just made in America.
You are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. I'd like to thank Coach Kim Gidley from the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. And folks, I'm telling you, if you know a young lady that is a hard worker and wants to be great at her life, send her out to train under this wonderful, wonderful coach there. And golly, what a leadership bastion of learning there. What a fantastic place. And just thank you to Kim. And thanks for listening this week to American Tennis. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and we'll be back again next Wednesday with American Tennis. God bless you.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.